All right, Reggie, how you doing, my friend? Good, good, good. Nice thumbs up. All right, well, what do you say? We just jump right into a little podcasting, okay? All right, very good. Put it in the book, episode 489, 489er. And I'll give you the three S's, star, smile, strong. And here we go. Ready? Just hit that record button anytime you're ready, pal. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Hey, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, it's always good to listen, but I always urge you to get out there and hit the streets and tell your friends and tell your family and tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you want to hear some old podcasts, if you like what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, well, you can always go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and there they are. We've been doing this for almost 10 years now and almost 500 episodes, so there's lots and lots to go through and see where we've been so you know where we might be going. You never know, but it sometimes gives you a little signpost to go that way or this way or take a left or take a right. I never know what direction we're going, so but please, if you want to find out or listen to some old podcasts, certainly do that and have some fun, because after all, we've been having fun, as I said, for almost 10 years and almost 500 episodes, and this is episode 489. So I've told you many times over the last 10 years, we're getting close to that 10-year mark. May of 2026? That's not too far away. 10-year mark, 500 episode mark, we're knocking on the door. This is 489. We got 11 weeks. 11 weeks. I don't even know how many weeks are left in the year. Are there 11 weeks left in the year? Maybe, but just maybe right on the brink. And I mean, look, guys, I mean, I love you, but I mean, I might not be doing one on, you know, recording one on New Year's Eve. but anyway, I've told you many times, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, that I am not very handy when it comes to the automobile. At all. Scary object for me. I've told you many times that I could do a few things around the house. I'm certainly not a handyman. I'm certainly not one of those people that you say, oh, he can fix anything. No, that's not the case. And as I, you know, I'm not making an excuse for it, but I think a lot of that comes from you know, if you were raised in that kind of atmosphere. My dad wasn't a fix-it guy. My dad was kind of a call-the-man guy. And so a lot of that stuff you get passed, you know, gets passed on to you. Now, there's granted, I could have certainly used my own initiative. I mean, I'm not blaming my dad or my circumstances for not being a handyman, knowing a lot about cars, knowing a lot about how to fix, things around the house, whether it's pipes or electricity. I'm not, you know, some people are very handy. And I'm just saying that it seems to me when I talk to many of the people who have that skill and have that information, a lot of it was passed down, whether from a father or even a grandfather, or at least if all the information wasn't passed down, the initial interest in it to fix things, that mindset, that curiosity that comes with it, or that sense of accomplishment, like, hey, this was broken and I fixed it. That kind of a inspirational thing internally, I think, might be passed on. There's some people that may have learned a few things from other generational people like your father or your grandfather or your mom. Hey, I'm not being, gender specific here. Hey, there are some moms that can fix a lot of things too. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, when it comes to cars and things like that, you know, you think of the Norman Rockwell painting, if you will, moment of the father with the young kid sitting at his heels as dad fixes the car or dad, you know, fixes a pipe, and the kid's kind of looking in both awe of his dad doing this thing as well as in curiosity of, well, I wonder how he's doing that. I don't know if, you know, if Norman Rockwell never did one of those, boy, that would be a great one. I love Norman Rockwell paintings and things. I know a lot of people don't consider him a true artist. They consider him an illustrator or whatever. But for a certain moment in time in this country, he captured the ethos and the zeitgeist of our society and our culture. And some of those things still resonate, sadly. Not only the emotion that he portrayed in some of his illustrations, but sadly, even some of the actual depictions are very relevant, 50, 60, 70, 80 years later, which is unfortunate. But anyway, so what I'm saying is I could have easily taken my own initiative when I was younger and said, well, geez, you know, my dad isn't interested in fixing things and like this, but boy, I'd like to be able to learn how to do that. So I could have taken a class in car repair, or I could have bought some books and looked at it. I didn't. So I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying, though, if you're raised in that kind of culture, like, well, hey, let's see if we can fix this. If that's kind of a normal, natural thing, you absorb that when you're young, and then that mindset is there. If that little mindset there of like, how do we fix this, as opposed to how do we get this fixed? Really big difference in verbs there. Huge. How do we fix this, or how do we get this fixed? Big difference. Now, how do we fix it is very proactive, and how do we get this fixed is passive. We got to call somebody. In other words, in those immortal words of Andy Griffith, call the man. You know, what's interesting is if you watch enough Andy Griffith shows, that episode when Aunt B has the freezer that is not working well, and Andy continually asks Aunt B to call the man to get it fixed, but of course Aunt B wants to save money. But then there's other episodes where we see Andy fixing electrical things. And so it's like, you know, little consistency is good. If Andy could fix one electrical, if he could fix a wire in an extension cord or in a lamp that he was fixing one time when one of Aunt B's old boyfriends, Roger, came over and Andy was fixing it. If he could do that, then why can't he at least take a look at the freezer? But Andy didn't want any part of the freezer. But then later, he's fixing electrical things. So I'm always catching those inconsistencies. Either Andy's a fix-it guy, or he isn't. Now, granted, the freezer is a much more complicated thing. And fixing a wire, I can even do that. I've even done that. Believe it or not, I've actually done that, where you splice the wire together and you put the electrical tape. I've done that. Back in the old days when you used to have wired stereos, speakers. Okay, nobody, right now there's a certain age group, nobody even knows what the heck I'm talking about. Could you imagine explaining to somebody who's a teenager that speakers had or needed to be connected by a wire? No such thing. No such thing. We don't even, our headphones, our earphones, our earplugs, our earbuds don't even have wires on them anymore. Could you imagine thinking that a speaker needs a wire? Well, in my day, they did. But yeah, I used to splice those things together to make the speaker wire longer, or if there was a frayed, needless to say, unfortunately, in my day, when I was cutting grass on a regular basis, I cut the cord a few times, long before people were cutting the cord for cable. As I said, I hate to admit it, but yeah, I cut the lawnmower extension cord a couple of times in my day. We used to have an electric lawnmower. Never had a gas one. I had a gas one when I first got married on my own because of the fact that I didn't want to keep cutting the cord. But when I lived at home, our lawnmower cord had more electrical tape on it. Yeah, I wasn't always good at whipping that cord around. So I bought a gas one. I'm like, enough of this. I know there's a little more, regular maintenance you need to do with the oil and things like that. But I'm like, you know what? It's worth the extra 5 minutes than cutting that cord. But when you cut that cord, rather than just throwing it out, or you're in, the worst thing is that you're halfway through cutting your grass and you cut the cord, it gets stuck underneath the blades. And now what do? I can't leave my grass half cut, especially if it's the front grass. So then you have to go into, emergency mode and fix it yourself. And so I kind of learned that on my own, to be honest. I tried to do that, and I sort of figured it out. You just put all those wires together and you tape it up. And so, yeah, I taped my share of of cut cords. But I can fix a few things. I told you one time, I believe I actually installed a light fixture in the kitchen of a past home we had. This was 30 years ago. I would never try that now. But, when you're younger, you're like, oh, I can do that. I don't need to call the guy. I learned, soon in my homeowner days that I needed to call the guy. But initially, you're all that do-it-yourself mode and, I could do this. And, you want to show off that you know how to fix things. My wife figured out pretty quickly that I'm not the fix-it guy that I try to pretend to be. Or tried. I don't even try anymore. But I did put in a light fixture in our old kitchen. And every time I turned the light on for about 3 years that we lived there, I was expecting a fire. I was expecting a large pop, and I was expecting some kind of a smoke to come from somewhere. Every time I turned the light on, almost literally. And I was like, oh, wow, I can't. I was still in awe that I was able to do that correctly. But I still didn't trust myself. So I'm not completely inept. I'm somewhat apt, if you will. But not completely apt. I'm somewhat apt at those things. But as I said, I don't blame anyone except myself. I could have certainly done this on my own and learned how to do some of these basic things as well, but the car, the stuff around the house, once again, you could try to do some of the plumbing and then all of a sudden you go, oh, this is not worth it, or, do electrical things, but not major electrical things. I just found myself, every job is different. Everyone is unique. And if you have that general knowledge and you have some experience, then you learn the shortcuts and you learn how to do other detour things that get you to the right place. Don't get me wrong. I watch a lot of YouTube videos to do some things, and they're helpful. And they've worked exactly the way they've shown, but it wasn't a major thing. But a lot of times, here's how you do it. Yeah, well, my situation doesn't completely compare to that. And then, you're in trouble. You might not have the right tools. You might not have the right parts or things you need, and you just might not have the right process to fix it because your situation, while similar, is not exact. And that's when I fill in the blank, call the guy, call the man. But the car, for me, has always been a scary, ominous object. And once again, my dad was not a putterer, and he didn't fix cars. Some of my friends' dads were in the garage every night, certainly every weekend. I saw some of my friends' cars more with their hoods up in their garage than their hoods down being driven. I saw their family cars more that way, because if I'd go to their house or their, you know, I lived down the street and their garage was open. Some of my friends' dads, they were just fixing those cars. And if they weren't fixing them, not that there's everything wrong every day, but they were just puttering around in there. They were doing something. That hood was always up. I would venture to say that our cars that we had at my, with, you know, in my family, never had my dad's fingerprints on the hood. I don't think so. No, don't get me wrong. He used to, you know, I'm not being fair here. And I would say I don't have, they didn't have my fingerprints on it either, really. And I'm exaggerating, obviously. My dad used to fill, you know, top off, if you will. I can use some of those cool car phrases. Yeah, my dad used to top off his fluids. Boy, that doesn't sound good, does it? No. Yeah, no, he would top them off, you know, a little parking, you know, or a steering wheel fluid, or, you know, motor engine. I mean, he never changed his oil, but if, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you needed a little oil there, he showed me how to use the dipstick. Hey, look at me using the dipstick. Okay. Once again, that doesn't sound very good, does it? He knew some basics, but I'm just saying he wasn't sitting there. You know, if I had a picture of my dad, it wasn't leaning into a car hood. Once again, that's a Norman Rockwell painting, I think. You know, not seeing his face, just seeing his back, you know, and leaning in. There's some dads where you can, I bet you, your dad perhaps, if he used to like to work on a car or something, if you can close your eyes, you could see him leaning into the car, fixing something, touching something, you know, adjusting something with a wrench or with something, right? If you had one of those dads or moms, once again, I'm not trying to be, you know, sexist here, but mostly it's dads. Let's be honest. Okay. Can we at least be honest on that? Can we say that and be truthful? It's reality. But yeah, some people, you can think of your grandfather or your father, and they're in a common tableau, if you will, would be them leaning into the hood of the car to fix the engine. That was not my dad. That was not my dad. Let's put it that way. He knew enough to do the general kind of maintenance things, and that he did pass on to me. But when it comes to, you know, fixing this or doing that and stuff, I mean, to be honest with you, I still would have to wonder how to do the jump. You know, when you jump a car with the cables, I have the cables in my trunk, but I would not be, if you asked me right now, I wouldn't be exactly sure. Now, I'm not proud of that. And I've actually asked for this podcast records. I am going to go on my computer and look that up, because I should know that. That there's no excuse for that, Jim. You can't get a pass on that. But this is my point. When it comes to cars, I can check the air pressure. I can check the oil. If there's a dipstick, these days, some of these cars are so computer driven, there's not even a dipstick anymore.
In my day, we had dipsticks to find out if you needed motor oil. Then we used to dip them in there and pull them out and then wipe them off and then stick it back in there to see what the level was. And our hands got greasy and oily and it got dirty, but we liked it. We loved it.
Yeah, but no, I can do some, you know, I could fill the windshield wiper fluid, that little blue cap. Hey, you need someone to fill your window washer with the blue cap thing in your engine? Just text me. I'll be there in a second. But when you start talking about distributor caps and and carburetors and all, you're speaking a whole other language. In fact, to get to the meat of my story here, this is the first time, you know, I'm usually very good because I'm very honest. I'm not trying to be Mr. Macho Man and say I could fix this stuff. No, I'm being very honest. I know that I can't do it. I admit that I can't do it. And so I don't pretend that I could do it anymore. And this way I just, get it done. So with my cars, in terms of oil changes and regular maintenance schedules, I take it in to the mechanic and get it done so that I have, a very good confidence and faith that when I get into my car and I hit the engine, the starter, it's gonna start. Now, back in the old days, in my day, I'm sure some cars still, but I don't even know. I have not had a car with a key engine, you know, needing to put the key in to turn it. I have not had a car with an engine, with a key engine in several years now. It's just that push button. As I used to always say, you know, if I turn the key and that car doesn't start, I don't know what to do. And it's the same thing here. If I press that engine button and it doesn't go vroom, I'm in trouble. So I am a stickler when it comes to having my maintenance done. Oil changes, we get the little warning, boom, I go in. If there's a warning light, I go in. I look at my schedule. Oh, you need this and this. I might pay probably more than I should. Maybe I'm being over cautious, but I know that if I'm not over cautious, if I don't, then I'm going to wind up being in trouble. The car is going to be stalled somewhere and I'm going to be completely, stranded. And also, most likely, if you don't take care of the car correctly, maybe you don't pay up front, but then you pay back at the back end when something breaks and then you need a new this and a new that, and it needs to be installed, and between the parts and the labor, my gosh. I mean, you know, you have to call Ice-T and get that, that car repair insurance. So I am a stickler for that. I go when I'm supposed to go and get those things done so that when I get in the car every time, I have a high confidence level that I'm going to get where I'm going. Now, granted, some of my first cars, I probably knew more now or then that I do now about the inside or the hood of a car. Because I remember my first car, boy, that thing was a clunker. I was in that hood a lot. I was topping stuff off, and that car was, I had no confidence in that car at all. And it was not a fun thing. And I remember after a while, I was like, okay, thankfully I was able to afford it. And I'm like, I'm getting a new car. I'm tired of buying somebody else's problems and you never know and stuff like that. And it's made life much, much less stressful if you're somebody that doesn't putter. But so the car has always been a little intimidating for me. I can fix or attend to some of the easy stuff, some of the basics, but when it gets past that, I don't pretend to know how to do it, and I don't even try, because especially to me with an engine, especially in today's world, there's some people that know a lot about cars, and even today they're very complex, as I said before, because of all the computerization, that even if you know and have a great knowledge of basic knowledge and even or even in-depth knowledge of fixing a car, you really have to be very knowledgeable and skilled just because of the way some of these engines are designed now with all the computerization. But, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, that was a common thing in my neighborhood. The hoods were always up, especially on a Saturday afternoon, except in my garage, right? But anyway, so the point is that I'm very cognizant of the car and its inner workings. And if there's a warning light that goes anywhere, I am very aware and I attend to it very quickly. Now, as I said, because I go in regularly for the oil changes and they, you know, they once again, I don't want to sound like, I know my way, I could use some jargon, when you go in for an oil change, they top off your fluids, So as I said, though, if you ever need, I can top off my, my windshield wiper fluid. That one I'm good at, because you can't wait that long on that one. You know, you can't wait until your next oil change to get the new oil and all your fluids topped off. They usually go through everything and make sure when you get the oil change, they usually, do a 20-point, checkup. We check this and we check that and we check this and we check that, the 20-point system. I don't know how much they really do, but now today you get the nice, printout to show you all that. I don't know. Once again, to use one of my favorite lines from Seinfeld, and the reason why I love to quote it and I still laugh at it is because of my lack of car knowledge, and this was definitely a reference to that, and so many of us who fall into that category. There's an episode where Jerry's going to get his car fixed. But he doesn't go to the putty, the usual mechanic. And he says, Jerry says, no, I didn't go to putty. Because George says, well, what's the big deal? If putty says it costs this much, that's what it costs. And he says, well, no, I didn't go to putty. And he goes, why didn't you go to putty? He said, of course the other place is overcharging you. George says, of course. He says, they're overcharging you. I mean, I don't know. It needs a new Johnson rod. Yeah, all right. Well, put it in, right? I mean, that's the way I am. If I go to the mechanic, well, you need a new Johnson rod. Yeah, well, I guess put it in. I don't know from a Johnson rod. That's the way, that's the way, it feels sometimes. You're kind of, at their mercy. I don't know. I mean, like I said, they give you this nice new sheet that has, we check this and this and this and this and this, but I don't know. Yeah, well, put in a new Johnson rod, I guess. Yeah, I tell you, it's the scariest thing to go to a mechanic or, a dealership or even like an oil change kind of place, one of those quickie places, just because because I'm walking in, first of all, I'm walking in at a disadvantage off the bat. I'm walking in at a disadvantage. They know way more about this situation than I do. Like I said, it's a Johnson rod. Yeah, I guess. I don't even know if there is a such thing, right? So I'm already at a disadvantage, and they know that. And I'm not saying that everybody's unscrupulous, but, hey, this is this is the real world here, and a lot of places always try to sell you up on things. That's part of the business, right? This is a capitalist society. You come in there once a year, so hey, or you know, twice a year, so hey, you know, they're going to try to get you know, a few little odds and things off of you there. I mean, that's common knowledge, right? That's not saying anything bad, but as I said, or you know what? Hey, maybe that's not the case. Maybe you're a mechanic and you say, hey, screw you. Okay, all I know is I feel, then it's my own fault. I feel very inferior when I walk in there because, as I said, I don't feel I'm on even ground, right? They know a lot more about the car and a lot more about that than I do. That's why I'm coming, but they certainly have an advantage on me. And so, and they're always asking, do you want to do this? And you always feel like, oh, so there's a lot of stress in that. You know, it's like, I just came for the oil change. That's what I wanted. I want the oil change. Sometimes I'll say, yeah, you know, I want the 50,000 mile checkup. Or, you know, yeah. As I said, I'm very, you know, I'm willing to do that. Because even if it's a, you know, it's not cheap, but it's certainly cheaper than when something breaks. And that's the way I look at it. You've got to mitigate the potential hit. You know, a car is a depreciating asset. The minute you pull that, you know, it's a cliche, but it's true. The minute you pull that new car, and I put that in quotes, because unless you literally get it from the factory, as it's literally pushed off the assembly line, you know, any, even if you get a new car, if you look at the mileage thing, it's been driven around, it's been test driven, you never get a car with all zeros on the odometer, right? But the minute you buy or lease that new car, in quotes, and you drive it off the lot, it immediately depreciates from in the 5 seconds that you were sitting there still in the parking lot with your turn signal trying to cross traffic to get out of there. Right then, it still has retained its value. But as soon as that your front wheels leave the parking lot driveway, and I think it's just the first two wheels. You know, it didn't need to be all four wheels. As soon as the front two wheels officially leave the driveway or the parking lot of the dealership, that car goes down in value. It is no longer new, if you will. It's under your name. You're driving it, and it's yours, and it's now going to get miles on it. Before, that's not, even though at the dealership, it's not new, really, because they've driven it around. A few people have taken test drives in that car, or it was driven from here to there to get it to the lot, whatever it is. They consider that new. But once you get in it, and you sign for it, and as I said, those front two wheels leave the drive of the part of the car dealership, then it's not new anymore, and that depreciates, and it continues to depreciate from the two wheels out of the driveway of the car dealership right to the first stoplight that you hit, which could be 40 feet. It's already depreciated. You made a turn and you got a red light. Car is worth less than it was 45 seconds ago. And it's going to continue to depreciate. That's all it is. It's a depreciating asset. That's why one reason I never bought a new car. I've always leased them. I've never bought them because I don't think you ever own it. I mean, do you ever? I mean, what I try to do. One reason why I lease cars is because, once again, I'm thinking ahead. When does a car usually start to need more maintenance? After 3 or 4 or 5 years, things start to break down. And so that's why I've pretty much leased cars for the last 30-some years after 2 or 3 year leases, because I'd rather start over with a new car than start to get into that stuff when parts start to break and things start to get worn down. I can't fix those things. I'm honest about that. And so it's really been very stress-free kind of time because, as I said, when I had some of my first cars, you know, bought some used cars, you know, young person, didn't have, you know, as much disposable income. And so, and I just found that I was buying other people's problems and it was not fun. And I never really was confident about driving either long distances sometimes without something potentially happening. So it was a great weight lifted off my head when I just said, you know what, I'm going to go this route. But anyway, that's the thing. It's like it's always been kind of a stressful situation whenever you need to get the car fixed. Because, as I said, I walk in there feeling very, very at a huge disadvantage, you know, because I'm not really expecting I'm not really know what to expect, right? Hey, needs a new Johnson rod, right? So I've been, as I said, for the most part, I go and I get it done when it's you know, supposed to be done. But I, you know, every so often a light will go on and you go, uh-oh, what's that? You know, then I go in my manual and I can, you know, like a lot of these cars today, I mean, you know, they've got the tire thing. Boy, is that crazy? I mean, you know, it's amazing, thanks to the computerization and technology of the way a car can work today and give you so many new amenities that were never possible before. When you go to buy a new car in today's world, I mean, if you've ever gone in lately, you know, once again, I know nothing about cars. I don't know about rack and pinion steerings, and I don't know about engines. I know nothing, right? But I used to know some questions to ask, or at the very least, the salesman used to talk about the inner workings of this new car and the advantages of the inner workings of the engine. Now, once again, he was speaking a foreign language to me, but at least it sounded as if, well, this car has the auto this and the this that, you know, wow, okay, and the combustible this. Interesting $17 words that made it sound like this car was built well. You know, you were always worried about the engine being built well. And I'm sure maybe if you go into some other kind of cars, especially big kind of luxury cars where they're, you know, with fast engines, then maybe that stuff is more talked about and discussed when you're buying a new car. But for what I've found over the last, certainly in the last 10 or 15 years, is that all of those engine-specific kinds of terminologies, they never, you know, they used to be a regular part of the car sale process. Now, it's all the amenities. I don't even think, the last time I got a new car, I don't even think we open the engine. Usually when you get a new car, they open the engine. Now, once again, if you open the hood of the car, I don't mean they open the engine. They open the hood to look at the engine. I mean, if you do that with me and you're going to show me something, you should hear how hard I'm laughing inside. Because I have no, you're telling me, well, you see that over there, and there's the blah blah blah, and I'm nodding like, oh yeah, sure, there's the Johnson rod. I have no idea what he's talking about, and usually I'm sure a car salesman gets a sense, probably right off the bat, as to, well, this person knows an engine. And you know, knows a car and is into that, and this one doesn't. And so maybe I give off such a vibe that I know nothing about an engine that at this point, the salesman doesn't even waste their time, and I don't blame them. They don't even waste their time to open the hood to even show me, because they know this guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. If I'm going to tell him about, oh, look, it's got this new thing here, this new in the engine, He's going to nod his head and act like he knows what he's talking about, and he doesn't know. And I don't. Now, I wish they would open that. I mean, and I don't even think about asking to open the hood. You know, maybe that's the thing. Maybe they're waiting for my lead. I don't know. You know, you go to get a new car once every 3 or 4 years. I don't know what the deal is. But maybe, I don't know, maybe I should be asking, can we open the hood? And then the guy goes, or woman, says, oh, well, maybe he knows something. You know, and so it's like, yeah. But I remember this, like, in fact, the car that I just got about a year and a half ago, I don't think we opened the hood. I don't think we opened the hood because it was all about the internal things and all the amenities. And, oh, it's got a screen here, and you hit this button here, and it shows you this here, and look at this display. It was all about the inside of the car and all the cool gadgets and things. And you press this button. It had nothing to do with the tire pressure, the rack and pinion steering. I don't even know if that's a thing anymore. I just remember seeing that on commercials, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. This car's got rack and pinion steering. So I don't know. Does it have rack and pinion steering? I don't know. yeah. Yeah, you definitely, if you're a car salesman, you want me walking in. You definitely want me walking in. But, yeah, because you're going to be able to sell a car pretty easy with me. I have no questions to ask. Does it run? If I press the engine button, will it start? Yeah. Where's the gas gauge? Okay. Where's the how do I know how fast I'm going? Where's the speedometer? You know, where's the and from my standpoint, where's the radio on and off? Where's the navigation system? Yeah, you know. But I mean, I think that's I don't know that I think that might be most people today. But yeah, I mean, for a car salesman to open the hood and show me anything, it's really like, okay, I'm going to do this, but you know, and I know that you don't know what the hell we're talking about here. But I'm very, very cognizant of my lack of knowledge, and so I try to take the car as much as I can. So I'm always very, very aware of those lights. As I said, on a newer car, do you have that tire thing? Oh, when I see that tire thing go on the dashboard, you know, sometimes it's legit. Your tire pressure is down. But sometimes it's off. It's apparently a very sensitive thing, and it'll show that it's off and it isn't. And then you got to go get the tire gauge and check this and fill that one and not fill that one, or it's too much or it's too not. In the summer, you know, all of a sudden, because the car is hot, and it's warm and you're driving, then the air pressure gets too high. You got to let it out. But if you let it out too much, you can't, because then if it cools down, then you'll have enough. Oy vey. Where are those Jetsons flying cars? We've been waiting 50 years for those darn things. All we got is electric. I want levitation. I don't have to worry about tires anymore. But, oh, when that tire light goes on, oh, it's always like, okay, is there a way that I could turn this off? Or I got to get look at me. I got to get my tire gauge. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm Mr. Car. I got a tire gauge. It's never very consistent. The way the thing pops up, that little tire, you have one of those little tire gauges that look like a pen where you stick the little round part on the on the nozzle of the tire, and it shoots the thing up, and it pops out, and it shows you how much. I wonder how really, accurate that is. Thankfully, there are some, tire filling things now at air filling things at gas stations that. You put that on there and it reads your tire pressure. I love those. I don't trust that little thing with the white thing that pops up. Oh, 34, right? Okay. And then you do it again, it's 31. I don't know. I mean, 3 pounds is 3 pounds. It's a big difference. Especially when you're trying to get that freaking light out on that on the thing. It's like, oh, there's nothing better than when you go and you fill the tire up and you get and then you turn the car back on and that tire light goes off. Oh, thank God. But anyway, I'm very cognizant of any lights that are on that dashboard. But because I go regularly to get my maintenance done, I don't really have a lot of lights that pop up on my dashboard, aside from that tire thing now and then. Well, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, driving the car. And now, I mean, you know, these cars, as I said before, you know, they have these little messages that pop up. Oh, don't forget your key. you've forgotten your phone. I mean, the car is talking to you more than the people that's sitting next to you in the car. The human, your car has more you have more conversation and more communication with your car sometimes than you do with your passenger. So I turn the car off. No, I turn the car on. Once again, hitting that button and keeping my fingers crossed that I hear vroom. And yeah, wow. All of a sudden, and then I look and no lights, no yellows, no messages. Great, let's put it in reverse and get out of here. Let's drive. Phew. And it's been that way, as I said, because I do keep the maintenance of the car up. Now, I had an oil change about 6 months ago. And, and usually it's good until, you know, your next oil change and the little warning light comes up. You know, you have to get, it's time, you know, your oil life is at 15% or something, whatever all that stuff is, your oil life. I didn't know life had oils. But it is what it is, right? Well, all of a sudden there's a light. It's those damn yellow lights. They make sure that they make them yellow and red so you notice them. And right in the middle, there it pops up and it says, at next refueling, add a quart, engine level low, add 1 quart. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Here we go. You know what that means, don't you? I'm going to have to open the hood. Now, this is no lie. I'm always very honest with you folks. Not only did we not open the hood when I went to buy this car, we did not open the hood. I know we didn't, because I remember getting in the car with my wife and saying, you know, we didn't even open the hood. Does it have an engine? I mean, for me, that's the only reason, if I'm buying a new car, that's the only reason that you open the hood. It's just to show me, to give me the peace of mind that, yes, there is an engine in here, in this car. You will be able to drive it. Aside from that, I really, you know, it's completely foreign. But, I mean, we got in the car and I said, well, I do know about this and here and the way that this the seat moves back and forth and this thing talks to me, blah, blah. But I hope it has an engine in it, because we didn't look to see if it has an engine in it. And I've had this car for a year and a half, and I've gone for the normal maintenance things. And, of course, you know, you pull in and you give them the key and then you go to the waiting room. I'm not looking at the engine. The pros are looking at my engine and doing what they need to do for the maintenance, but I'm not. I mean, I hate to admit this. I sound so crazy. I shouldn't be owning a car with this lack of interest and curiosity and knowledge, really. I understand that. There's a lot of car people out there who know how to fix a car, and you guys, I know, are rolling your eyes at me or laughing hysterically like, wow, how did this guy even get this far, you know, to live this long without knowing anything about a car, right? But but I'm owning it. What can I say? I did not open the hood of this car in a year and a half. So much so that I get this message on my dashboard that at the next refueling, your engine level is low, your engine, your motor oil, engine oil, I don't even, what is it called? Motor oil? Right, motor oil, engine motor oil is low. Add 1 quart. And so I'm like, oi, uh-oh. You know what that means, Jim? You're going to have to, oh, for the first time, you're going to open the hood of this car. Maybe we should throw a party. It's going to be the first time you're going to see your engine. I hear it running. I assume the engine's there. I hear a difference. When I get into the car, I don't hear anything, right? Then I press this button, and I hear something, which I assume is the engine. And then when I shift the gear and I press on the gas, the car moves. So I'm assuming that that is the engine sound. And then when I'm done, I put it in park. I hit that button again, and then I don't hear that sound, that rumbling sound. So I assume that the engine, which I assume is in there, a lot of assumptions going on. I assume there's an engine in there. And then when I hit that button the second time, I'm assuming that it's turning off. That's almost the extent of my knowledge. So now when I see this yellow message that says I have to add a quart of oil. Okay, stop everything. Stop everything. Stop the clock. We've got a new crisis on our hands. Last week, I told you that I was in a pumpkin spice crisis. Now I'm in a car crisis. I'm going to have to open my hood and get this, folks. I mean, get a handle on this if you can. You know, grab the armrests on your chair right now. I might have to add the oil myself. Ah! I might have to not only open the hood, I might have to get involved with that stuff under the hood. So I'm like, okay, what is, I'm hoping that, first of all, it's something that is, you know, there's the gauge is off, right? Maybe it's just an errant message, but no. After the next three or four times I'm starting and stopping the car, that same message comes up. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to address this now. Because you have to keep your car going. I don't know why I'm a quart low. I wasn't a quart low the first year that I had it when I went for my, my oil change. I'm not sure why I'm a quart short, but it says I'm a quart short. So, this is a big deal, though, now, because now I have to, A, open the hood, B, I don't know if I trust this little message, so I'm going to have to try to find the dipstick to check it myself. I mean, that, once again, I'm Jimmy Carr. I'm Jimmy Auto. I'm in Jimmy Auto Zone, if you will. Yeah, I could check a dipstick. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Look at me. If I could find it. If there is one. But I'm going to have to go in there. I'm going to lift the hood up. I'm going to have to go in there. I'm going to find the dipstick. Then I'm going to have to find not only the dipstick. I'm going to have to find out where do I put the oil in. Where's the, you know, there's all those little caps. Where's that cap? This is not a fun thing here, folks. Jimmy AutoZone is not feeling very confident here. Why me? Why am I a quart low? Why am I a quart low? Why are you doing this, Deemy? Why are you doing this to me, Deemy? So, the first thing is, okay, let me go and and check the dipstick myself to make sure that this little computerized thing isn't giving me a false warning light here. So I got to open the hood of the car. That's easy enough, right? Usually, you know, right there, like below your steering wheel, there's a little crank, a little lever that you use, or a button, and it usually is like a little diagram of the front hood lifting. And then you go, okay, well, there's the one, they have the one for the back, you know, for like the hatch if you've got an SUV, and they've got the one for the hood. You know, at least it's marked somewhere, just to the left a lot of times, lower left from your steering wheel. Look at me, knowing where that is. I'm not as car ignorant as I pretend to be. Well, I've never looked for this because I've never even thought about opening the hood. But now I have to. The car's telling me I have to. Damn message. So, I'm looking for the lever to open up the hood. And I see the back one, and I'm seeing, you know, this thing and this light, and I'm not seeing that nice little picture of the hood. And I'm not seeing even, sometimes you could at least see that lever. It's kind of hidden, but it's there. And I'm like, how the hell do I open this hood? And this is a good 15 minutes. 15 minutes. I'm looking for the hood lever. And I'm going outside. I'm like, well, maybe this car is a newer car. Everything's so newfangled. Maybe they've done away with the crank. You know, that might be an old thing. Someone says, what are you talking about? They don't make those levers and cranks for hoods anymore. There's a button outside, right? Which would make sense, to be honest with you. You know, car designers, here's a free, you know, why do I have to have that crank that's hidden somewhere? Why can't there be some kind of a button? All we are doing is pushing buttons now with cars. Can't we just push a button right by the front of the hood when you're out in the front of it and it opens? Why do I have to crank it, find this crank underneath from the inside? Why, if there's something wrong, I get out of the car, I go by the front of the hood, I press the button by the grill or something, underneath it or something, and it opens. Why can't we do that? Make it easy for us idiots. Make it easy for us ignoramuses who don't know anything about cars. Literally 15 minutes, if not more, I cannot figure out how to open the hood. Forget about checking the oil. I can't even open the hood. Guess what I do? I go to Google. How do I looked in my manual. I can't find, you know, I go to Google. I'm Googling now. How do I open my car hood on this specific model car? Well, there's usually a lever, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I know I read, but where? I don't find it. So now I'm on my knee. I'm, you know, finally I find it. It's not marked. It's hidden far underneath, but I find it. So thankfully, whew, I got that done. I open it up and it opens. And it's nice. I didn't even have to, you know, like a lot of times you have to, the hood opens a little, and then you've got to push it. And then it's got the little thing that you, to keep the hood up. This car has its own. You just open it, and it's got its own thing, and it stays open. It's very nice. So, okay, you know, one major hurdle done. I opened the hood. Now, I've got to look to see what am I going to do here. Where's the dipstick? I want to check the dipstick. I want to check this oil level to see if I'm getting an accurate little notation here on my dashboard. So I do have a flashlight in my glove box. So I get my flashlight out and look at me like Mr. You know, Jimmy AutoZone. I'm looking around and I'm not seeing the dipstick. It's usually pretty obvious. Got that little, little round thing on there that, so you can easily pull it out. A lot of times it's got a different color or something, so it's obvious because a lot of people, they know, even the people with marginal knowledge can check oil. I barely fit into that group, but, you know, so they make that the dipstick, you know, at least somewhat obvious and somewhat easy, you know, easy access so that you could check that yourself, even if you're a novice. But I'm looking around here and I'm not seeing, I'm not seeing a dipstick. Thankfully, I see this big thing in the middle of the hood, you know, in the middle of all this stuff that looks like an engine. I mean, I can't be sure that that was the engine because there's a little cover on it, but I'm guessing it's the biggest thing in there. So I'm assuming that's the engine. You know, you shouldn't assume. I understand that. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's the engine. And there's this cap. I love caps. Caps are nice. Caps are good. You have to be careful what you put into those caps, but at least there's a cap. That's a good sign. So I see the cap. And on the cap, wow, thank you, car manufacturer. On the cap, on this covering, on this big thing in the middle, which I'm assuming is the engine, there's a little oil can with a little drip. Oh, I told you, we're a visual society. We're a visual animal. Oh, that's got to be where I put the oil in. Now, I know it's not the dipstick because usually, just from past experience, when I did have to put oil in my older used cars, I know that you don't put the oil where you pull the dipstick out. I know that much. There's another cap. See, look at me. I know more than I even think I know. So I'm all excited, at least, when I have to put in this quart of oil, which is becoming a major deal in my life here. Really shouldn't, but it is. At least I'll know where to put it. There's a cap, and I actually unscrewed the cap. Look at me, righty-tighty, lefty-loosen. I know that. I open up the cap. I look. There's a little hole there. That's where the oil is going to go. And on this cap, there's this nice little yellow oil can with the drip. So I'm confident that that's where I'm going to have to put the oil when or if I do this. I'm very confident of that. But I still can't find the dipsticks. I still don't know because I don't want to put what if this is a false message? I don't want to put more oil in than it needs. You can't do that. And I don't know why I'm a quart short. Never been a quart short.
Yes. Okay.
But I'm just gonna let that joke pass. You heard the reference. You heard the possible joke there about being a quart short. You heard it. I don't have to be obvious with that. You know, just fill in your own punchline. But so now I'm like, oh. So now, of course, I have to go to the manual. Manual not helpful at all. I go online. How do I check, you know, the oil levels in this model car? And they tell me some cars have a dipstick, but some don't. No, it's just all computerized. So then you have to go into your, that menu screen and go and find the engine and then After several tries, I finally find the correct area within that dashboard because that thing is, harder to maneuver than, something that sends a rocket up sometimes. I think I went into the settings and I found engine and I hit engine and there's the oil. There's that same little, that drawing of the oil can with the drip. So I'm assuming that's the oil level and it does show that it's short. Okay. So now I know I need oil. Not sure why, but I need it. So now the next step is I got to buy the oil. Now, I know I could probably go to a mechanic or to the dealership, and I'm sure they'll put this oil in for me. But my gosh, how embarrassing is that? I mean, look, I am not a car guy, but I should at least, I mean, I've got some testosterone here. I should at least be able to put a quart of oil in a car. without having to go and see the man, right? I mean, come on. Just from your own kind of, you know, self-respect, you got to be able to at least put a quart of oil in an engine, especially when the cap's got the little picture on it. I mean, it's basically just pour it in. Get a funnel and pour it in. But I've got to find the right kind of oil, because that's a big deal now. I mean, now there's regular and synthetic, and there's all this these numbers, 06s and 02s and 05s and OWs, and I know more about motor oil engine types now in the last week than I've known in my entire life, because I'm online. I can't find the type of oil I need. I can't find it in the manual. It wasn't on the back of the cap. Sometimes it's on the bottom of that cap with the nice little picture on it. It wasn't there. So where do I go again? I go online. What type of motor oil does this year, this model, this make, car take? And I look, and it mentions two different types. And of course, with the proviso, do not put the wrong oil in this car. This is now I'm thinking of the same thing about when I would turn on the light switch when I put in the light fixture. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to buy the wrong oil. I'm going to put it in and the car's not going to start. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea. But my lack of knowledge of a car, that's where I'm leading. It leads me. So I'm now very paranoid about which oil to get. So I go to a place, a car place to find the oil. I've got these two numbers. I see they have both, but I'm not sure which one to get. So I'm going to go to the guy, you know, by the checkout and say, do you know what kind of oil I would need? Because they say, you know, ask the attendant there. So he says, what kind of car do you have, blah, blah, blah. I tell him, and he goes, he's on the computers hitting the buttons. I mean, that's what they should be able to do, because I mean, they're selling all these different oils for all these different cars, right? So they should be able to access that. And he hits the buttons, and he hits return, and he says, oh. Whenever someone, as I told you before, when a doctor says, huh, or any kind of salesperson says, oh, never a good sign. Oh, there's not one listed. What? My car has to take oil. You're a car supply store. How could you not know what kind? How can you not have access to what kind of oil my car takes? But he tells me, it's not here. You'll have to, maybe it's on the bottom of the cap. If not, you'll have to, find out. That was his answer, literally. So much for customer service. So I checked that little cap already with the nice little oil can with the drip. There wasn't any oil, type listed there. So what do I have to do? I call the man, not to put it in, but I call the dealership to find out what type of oil does my specific make and model take. And he picks up, I get a guy and he says, yeah, he said, I'm looking, what he goes, oh yeah, you have to take this synthetic, blah, blah, blah. He says, now, if you're close to us, we can always tip this off for you. I'm like, no. I mean, I don't live that close. And, I could put an, I'm all of a sudden, Jimmy AutoZone again. No, I'm fine. I just wanted to make sure I got the right one. Yeah, you might want to put it in, make sure. I said, I got the light popped up. Yeah, well, okay, you might want to, put it in about a third at a time because maybe it's taking a little, if it needs a little less, you don't want to, fill it over. Okay, fine. I get the oil. It was one of those two numbers that he said. I go to that same place that the guy said he didn't know what it was. They have it. I buy it. I go home. Now I know how to open the hood. I know where to put it in. But I'm looking for like a funnel. I know I have a funnel. I can't find the funnel in the car. I haven't put oil in the car in years. So I'm like, all right, I'll do it just by hand. Okay. And I put it, you know, now I'm very conscious about, you know, I lift off the cap, and there's this little black cap, and I take the cap off, and I was surprised to see there wasn't any foil over the top of the oil. I just twisted off the cap, which was sealed, and it had a little ring on it, like to keep the cap on there in case you need it so you don't lose it. But I was surprised that there wasn't a little, like, you know, like now in, you know, in pills and stuff, they have that little foil that you break. I was surprised that it was on there. But anyway, so I put it right next to it, and I'm going to go slow, and I'm looking, and I've got, you know, I could see that it's still filling, and it's done. And I'm like, okay. And I put the cap back on, and I feel good. And I close the hood, and I turn the car on, and boom, that light. That message is no longer coming on. Look at me. I did it. I actually did it. I opened the hood. I put in the oil. I bought the right oil. I put it in. You know, I opened the cap. I put it in. I turned the car on. It started. It didn't blow up. And the light didn't come on. I did it. I actually put a quart of oil in my tank, in my engine. Look at me. I'm really Jimmy AutoZone now, right? So I've got the empty little, you know, quart of oil, and I'm going to throw it in the garbage in the garage. And I notice that I don't have the little black cap that was on the top. And I'm like, well, where's the black cap? Because it's plastic. Where's the black cap? I look around the ground. It didn't fall on the ground. It's not, I look, now I get on the ground underneath the car. It's not there. I'm like, you know what? I did put it somewhere under, you know, on the engine around here somewhere, out of the way. But now I don't see it. Did it fall in the engine? Oh, no. It's plastic. It fell in the engine. What if it fell in the engine now and it's stuck somewhere and the car is hot and this plastic melts and now, you know, I'm going 15, you know, steps ahead and oh, my gosh, now what did I do? You mean to tell me that I put the oil, I did everything right and now I'm going to wind up, you know, ruining my engine because I lost the plastic cap and it fell in the engine somewhere and it melted and it did something to, oh no. I'm like, I can't believe this. Why didn't I drive the half hour to the dealership and have them top it off? Why do I think that I know anything about cars? Why did I open up that hood in the first place? I open the hood again. Oh, I got my flashlight and I'm looking around in every nook and cranny. Where did this little black cap? Because of course, the engine is black. Everything underneath that hood is black. I am never going to find this thing. Even if I find it, I can't find it. And I'm looking at I'm looking in every nook and cranny. And I am so depressed now because I'm like, this can't be good. It's not on the ground. I didn't drop it. I didn't throw it out. It's in this engine area under this hood somewhere. I don't watch Columbo watching Columbo has helped me become quite a detective. All those years of watching Columbo has really rubbed off. I know that that cap is in that engine somewhere. My only hope is that it's not in it. It's on top of it. But it's black. And so is everything else. I'm like, I have to find this thing. Because I'm afraid to start the car. I don't want this cap to melt in my engine. I don't know if that's even a logical problem, but in my mind it is. Because I know nothing about engines or cars. I just barely knew that was an engine. In my frustration, I'm ready to walk away and the light hits something just right. And I see the black cap that I did put in the engine area, but off to the side in some harmless kind of air thing that was just like near the top of the car. Maybe that's where the, you know, the, I mean, I once again, I have no idea where I put it on top of, but it looks like it may be where the defogger air comes out of. Anyway, oh, my blood pressure went down from 360 to at least what, maybe 115. Didn't go all the way down, but it went down appreciably. Oh, I found the cap. Thank you, God. Now, my motor engine oil experience has been a success. I close the hood. I throw the bottle out, the quart out, you know, the thing. And I walk out of the garage feeling like I am bursting with testosterone. Look out, ladies. Don't even come near me. I'll impregnate you if you're just watching me. I'm so macho at this point. Wow. I even looked back. I turned and looked back at the car, and I felt like, yeah, you and me, we've got a new relationship suddenly. I feel closer to you. I opened your hood. But I walked in the house, and I said, I topped off the engine fluid. Light went out. We're okay. Wow. I felt so much satisfaction. So cool. So manly. So Jimmy AutoZone. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, don't forget to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 489. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.
Motor oil, dipsticks, topping off fluids.